Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Player he's been.
How about Bart?
No, he's 27. Is that young, Pony?
No, it's not. He's gotten better since he came over from the Giants.
Henry Davis is 24. His career already looks like it is in like some jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
He went down to the minor leagues and went back to his personal old way of doing things to get improvement. There's not a single young 25 or under player on their roster that I will give majority or even a decent chunk of credit to Andy Haynes for that player's performance, mainly because there are very few 25 and younger guys actually performing well. Jared Triolo's 26. He's abysmal offensively. Ke'Bryan Hayes is 27. He ain't good either. Michael A. Taylor is Methuselah compared to those guys. He's one of the worst offensive players in the league. Yasmani Grandal, just to extend it out to not even young guys. Grandal, his OPS plus, remember that number I always used to cite? If you're 100, your league average, below it, you're not. You're worse. He's 35 years old. His OPS plus is 37, Pony.
I think that Bart should play over him right now. I think DeLay should be here, too. I would rather have Grandal DFA'd and go with those two guys.
I know, but he's a guy that they signed, and I think they much... Don't you think... Now, they're not going to have the same body of work that Telez did a couple of years ago, but don't you think they're saying to themselves, really, how far away is Yasmani Grandal from the guy who hit 23 home runs for the White Sox in 2021?
Or they're saying, we don't care. We just want the handling of the pitching staff and the defense to be good. And if he
if you had a better offense, wouldn't that be a much more defensible position if you just buried him at ninth? But your offense was good 1-7 or even 1-6. It's not, though. You need every available hand on deck to try to help your offense, and they aren't applying that kind of mindset.
Well, they also showed us with the Austin Hedges signing last year that they don't prioritize offense from catcher, and by making Henry Davis go out and play right field and not letting him play his natural position because he wasn't good enough defensively.
It's wild.
They told us that defense comes first at that position.
It's wild that as bad as Grandal was offensively for the White Sox last year, like he's taken a shovel and gone to a whole new level of bad this year. Like you can just pull up his baseball reference page and you'll get mad because it's like 10 seasons of being an above average offensive catcher by any metric and a very good one at times.
Mm-hmm.
Guy good enough to get MVP votes in a couple of years in the top 20. And he has become an atrocity here.
Here is Charrington on how the Pirates make the playoffs.
Some of it is certainly continuing to do what we're already doing well and lean into that and do it even better. I do think whatever ways we can improve here the second half of the season, if we're in it at the end and pushing into the postseason, it is most likely because we're a really good run prevention team and we can win close, low-scoring games. That's probably how we're going to do it. Some of the things we have going on the pitching side give us a chance to be that team. We believe that we got to go do it. To increase our odds of doing that, we got to keep getting better in other ways. And understandably, I think there's focus and talk about offense. And of course, that's what we're thinking about it too all the time.
We need to continue to do the things that we're doing well, says Ben. And this is an important thing, so I'm not going to say this to poo-poo it, but they're really only doing starting pitching well. If you're trying to keep going, if you want to have status quo for something, that's really the only thing you'd want to stay static in the second half of the season. Keep doing the things we're doing well. It's
one thing.
Only starting pitching. They're one of the top teams in quality starts, so pitchers are going deep into games, and they're not giving up a lot of runs. Everything else is mediocre or worse. They're not upper echelon at anything offensively, not even the small ball stuff like sacrifices and stolen bases and things like that.
But I think he's given away the game a little bit there when he says that, because I think he means it. Because know what? If you do the same things well, i.e. pitch from your starting rotation, and you get a couple of breaks here or there, just ball bounces differently, don't you figure you know, what are they? Are they at the exact halfway mark right now, numbers-wise?
No, they played two games more than that.
Okay, so they're 40-43 through 83 games. He probably figures if in the next 79 games they win, Pony, I'll say 42 of them, that gets them to 82 wins, that they will be right there in the last week of the season, maybe 43. You go 43-36, which I'm sure he would tell you with a couple of bounces here or there, we could have been that way. We're a team that had three or four games go against us. Here's a game, here's a game, here's a game. Forget about the few games where they did snatch victory from the jaws of defeat. I think that is how Ben Cherington feels about them making the playoffs. Do it that way.
Cherington on their offensive growing pains.
We are relying on young players, and we're always going to do that here in Pittsburgh. You know, that's really important. We embrace that. It's exciting. It's a part of what we're going to be as a team. We do have a number of guys who are still sort of inside their first full seasons as major league players. And, you know, you look at Triolo and Nick Gonzalez has come up and done a great job. And Henry Davis would have fit into this category when he was healthy on the team. If you add up the league offensive environment with the fact that, you know, we got some young players who are still inside a full season of major league experience and still inside that transition period as young players, we know it's not going to be a straight line. It's not going to be sort of a perfect linear from, all right, this is what you did as a minor leaguer, this is going to happen right away as a major leaguer. It's really never worked that way. It's particularly not working that way in today's game with the pitching and the defenses the way they are.
All right, so if he's saying it's never been harder for young hitters to thrive and succeed in Major League Baseball, and they didn't expect that, they don't think it's going to be linear, you go and you tear up AAA, you're going to tear up the major leagues. Mm-hmm. If the GM is saying that and he knew that and he's acknowledging that, then what the hell were their internal projections for this team? If he knew that they were going to have to rely on a lot of young hitters, and it's much easier for a young hitter to fail in Major League Baseball than it is for him to succeed, then did they just think they were not going to be a good baseball team this year? Because I don't think that
they said they were urgently trying to win. How do you do that without a good team? They also seem to think their offense would be better, which implies that you're going to bring up guys or add guys who are going to help your team right away. Right? Am I missing something? They thought their offense would be good.
That's not how his answer came across.
Before the season they thought, did they not?
Who's they? I mean, I think on the outside, the broadcasters and the people around the team and the media did. I'm saying based on that answer, maybe behind closed doors, they didn't think their offense was going to be that good.
Did they then expect their starting pitching to be this good?
No, I just think maybe.
Then where was the urgency? If they didn't expect their starting pitching to be good internally, and maybe they didn't have the same internal optimism about the offense that on the outside had, what did they expect?
Well, hold on a second. Give me a move that suggests that there was any urgency.
I go back to that because they said it and they never seemed to be a team that was embodying it.
Yes.
That is my point in bringing it up.
Yeah.
The owner said there was an urgency to win. The general manager echoed that sentiment. And at no point in time in their offseason, and certainly so far now, at no point in time has there been a sign or a signifier that there actually is urgency.
But that answer about young hitters makes it think that this is not a microwave season. It's more of a crockpot season.
Yeah, we're going to
let these guys slow cook.
Let them marinate.
Because young hitters need time. It's really hard for them
right now. But their young hitters are even worse than everyone else's.
Well, and I even reject that. I would say back to Ben, I doubt they'd let me do the interview with him on Sundays. That would be interesting. I would say back, well, what is your rebuttal for Arizona? Because their whole lineup was mostly guys who were in their mid to early 20s last year.
He'd say last year's
Corbin
Carroll.
Look, okay, it's changed. It's changed that much.
I'm just telling you what I think he might say in that situation, and then he could maybe point to their team this year where I think most of those guys
they got the
have
same
regret.
Record as the Pirates,
and most of those guys have been being either the same or regressed a little bit.
Here is, speaking of patience, here is Ben talking about having to wait out a trade.
We're at a period where it makes sense for us to consider turning certain players, maybe prospect younger players, into players that can help our major league team, you know, improve in the short term. Absolutely going to make sense. We're on the phone every day, teams. We're also at a point, still at a point in the season, that whole supply demand thing is there, and there's just not a lot of teams selling yet. So we just got to stay on it, trust ourselves, trust our process that between now and the end of July, we'll lock in on some of those opportunities to, you know, that have a chance to help our team.
So everybody wants to rip them off right now. It's an overpay situation. There are more the supply demand point is right. There are more teams that are in contention than out of it. Baseball did that on purpose when they expanded their playoffs. It does make it more tricky because those selling teams now hold cards.
But I don't think it's also going to change so much in the until between now and the trade deadline to make the everyone's trying to rip us off part any different. How many teams are realistically going to be out of it by then? Maybe two or three more than are currently out of it?
Depends. I mean, if the Cardinals and Padres start to run away from teams, you know, maybe the Cubs and the Reds and
the Cardinals are not
Giants
that good of a baseball
and teams
team.
Like that.
The Cardinals aren't that good.
Yeah, we've said that outside of last year. There have been plenty of years where we said that. Oh, this team, they're made up of guys we've never heard of before. They'll probably finish with a 500 record overall, and then they go and win a World Series.
My overall point the Cardinals. Is it is highly unlikely to me, as good as the Cardinals have looked since basically mid-May when they just suddenly caught fire, that too many teams are really going to suddenly become out of the race. There are right now, realistically, five teams that I think are sellers in all of Major League Baseball. I'm sorry, not five. There's about seven. Texas, Detroit, Toronto, the Angels, the Rockies, and
the Marlins.
And the Marlins. So that's what, six that I just named?
Two in the NL, and I think you named five. Four.
Four. Okay. The Rays are four games out. They're not out of it. I think that if Ben Cherington's main contention is we can't do this right now, we're going to get ripped off, you're going to be mad at how much it costs to get what we get back, then I don't think there's going to be a time where they're not getting quote-unquote.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Ripped off.
We're now joined by Greg Brown, Pirates broadcaster, and he is sponsored by Allegiant Federal Credit Union. Shape your future. Visit AllegiantFCU.org and by Gutter Helmet. Don't overlook your home's gutter system, 888-5-HELMET. Just heard Ben Cherington talk about how the best chance for the Pirates to make the playoffs is by having big-time internal improvements. There are more guys on the team than they could add at the deadline, and so needing those guys to get better. And there's tons of candidates offensively. One of them is Jack Sawinski, who's starting again tonight and is in center field. Greg, we were talking before about how he struggled so mightily, Jack Sawinski. They sent him down, had to call him back up because of an injury bug and Michael A. Taylor paternity list and all that stuff. One of my questions is, why haven't we seen Brian Reynolds in center field this year?
Well, I mean, I haven't asked that question, but for me, I wouldn't move Brian Reynolds. You know, the idea at the beginning of the season, you might remember, Andrew, was they were going to keep Brian Reynolds in right field much of this season and move Sawinski to left because they felt Sawinski was a better and more mobile outfielder. He had played a bunch of center field, still does, and that Reynolds would help, you know, with less wear and tear on his body out, especially at PNC Park. And they've obviously abandoned that because Reynolds has been so good in left field. And so for me, if, you know, I haven't asked the question, but I wouldn't move Brian Reynolds from left field. It's funny you ask that question because I did the Derek Shelton pregame show, recorded it about a half hour ago, and that was one of the questions I brought up. There's this idea that Sawinski, apparently, according to the statistics, is one of the worst center fielders, I guess, if not outfielders, in the league, which boggles my mind. And the numbers aren't terribly kind, I guess, to Reynolds. But the point is, asked about specifically Reynolds in left field and how great he's been out there, numbers aside, he helped save the game the other day. It was under the radar. I think it was the fifth inning, a scoreless ball game, and a leadoff walk. Falter walks the guy. The next guy, it looks like a sure double into the left center field gap. Reynolds races over there, cuts it off, holds the batter to a single. The very next hitter hits into a double play. And that's the kind of stuff Reynolds has been doing time and time again from left field. So For me, that's not even an issue. I wouldn't touch him. I wouldn't move him from left field.
Well, then who plays center? The guy that's hitting, the guy that stinks defensively out there and is hitting in the 100s? I mean, you got to get offense in that position, Greg.
Okay, well, if you move Reynolds to center field,
I'll play Olivares. Olivares hits
who
about
plays
100.
Left field?
We'll play Olivares out there. He hits about 100 points higher than Sawinski.
In left field?
Why not?
Because Edward Olivares is, now that, with no disrespect, is obviously why he plays right field. I mean, he doesn't compare, and I'm not looking at any numbers, but Edward Olivares is not nearly as good an outfielder as Sawinski and Reynolds.
Well, what is it about trying to win games 0-0? They got to get runs, Greg. They got to get hitters in the lineup here.
Yeah, but shuffling Reynolds to center field is
I got
to
find a way to
answer.
Get Sawinski out of the lineup, is what I'm saying.
Well, that's a different
that's
a different story.
I'm trying to come up with ways, and I said play him in center field. That's all.
No,
I
mean,
well then,
no, I wouldn't move.
Well, then
Reynolds
how do you do
somewhere.
It then, Greg? How do you get Sawinski to Indianapolis? Because he shouldn't play every day for a team that's fighting for a playoff spot when he's, as you said, statistically awful on defense, and he can't buy an extra base hit to save his life.
Yeah, I don't know what they're. I don't know what they're going to do. He was asked that in his scrum. Shelton on Sawinski said he's got to stay on the fastball. They just don't want to give up on a guy who's got that kind of power potential. They see it in him, and I guess in their mind, Andrew, they might ask, what options do we have? If it's not Sawinski in the outfield, the options frankly aren't great. Right now. Now I still feel, and maybe I'm, barking up the wrong tree. And I know he was given a shot earlier, but not a regular opportunity. But for me, if a team is not hitting the ball over the fence regularly, get me a guy who can get on and create havoc on the bases. And I know they tried it earlier, then he got hurt and he has been a disappointment, but Ji-Won Bae is again tearing it up at AAA. And so I don't know if that opportunity will come for him anytime soon, but for me, that's at least an option if they look to go that way.
Brownie, Ben Cherington talked and was asked about, trading for players that could help this team, since we're all talking about a way to get Jack Sawinski out of the lineup. And he intimated that right now the cost is too high, bottom line. Like, if you knew what I was being asked to give up for what I was being told I would get in return, you'd understand why I'm not doing this. And my response to you, or my question to you, is, given how many teams are still very much in the playoff chase by design, how much do you expect the prices really to go down between now and the trade deadline?
Don't know that answer either. And last time I hosted his show, I kind of brought that same thing up. And he talked about, we're working the phones. We keep working the phones. And I mentioned toward the end of that show about how the Padres got Luis Arraez. And he said that's because A.J. Preller kept working the phones, the GM of the Padres. And he said that's what we have to keep doing, and we're going to keep pushing it. We are talking. And so I don't know the answer to that either. Only he – well, I don't know that anybody knows because nothing's come to fruition yet. But I know they're working. I know they're trying. But there are, to your point, there are a lot of teams. Look, and, I mentioned this to him, too, a couple weeks ago. I just happened to listen to a podcast before the season started. I don't know what it was, but it was spring training. But David Cohn came out and said something very curious to me, and I wrote it down. He said, it is easier to find pitching now in baseball than it is hitting. And that has stuck with me since early March. And lo and behold, that is exactly the case right now. Everybody is looking for bats in baseball. So not only do you have only a few teams that are likely to move players, less than a handful, and you know who they are at this juncture. I mean, 3 weeks ago, I heard everybody talking about, Pete Alonso, the Pirates should go get Pete Alonso. Well, the Mets weren't going to move Pete Alonso. And that's the other thing, too.
Well, maybe when they were 15 games under.
No way. No chance.
Well, they're not.
No chance.
Well, he's going to go to free agency, Greg. He's not going to resign there.
But you're the Mets fan, Andrew. You know this better than anybody. That they're going to try and if they can salvage something and win this year, even though they've been in kind of a semi rebuild. But
I don't know if they were 10 games out, they might have traded him. Just like when the Yankees traded Aroldis Chapman to the Cubs. Yeah. Sometimes you got to, even in that market, just punt on a season.
My point is, 3 weeks ago, they were not going to move Pete Alonso when everybody was screaming for Pete Alonso. Right. They weren't going to do it. No way.
At that point, now, if they're 10 games out on July 28th, they would have done
that's
it for sure.
Well, that's a different story, of course.
Right.
But back then, when everybody, I heard it, I mean, you know it, why don't the Pirates go get Pete Alonso? Pete Alonso's available. Shame on them for not getting Pete Alonso. The Mets weren't going to move Pete Alonso.
I don't know if anybody said shame on them. It was
they did too. Everybody was they named Alonso and many others of why
this?
The Pirates don't get this guy. I heard you and you guys heard the talk. Well, Alonso was one of a handful of players that had been, and not just locally,
sure.
Nationally. I'm sure other cities were saying the same thing. You know, why don't the Cubs go get Alonso? I mean, that just happens. That's just the way it is in baseball. And it's good trade talk. It's fun. But there's no way the Mets were going to move Pete Alonso 3 weeks ago. It was a fallacy then, and it's a fallacy certainly now, the way they're playing. And anyway, back to the point that there are only a select number of teams who are going to be moving players,
yep,
at least for now. And those select teams only have a very select number of bats. Now think of that. You've whittled it down to two or three maybe bats available in a trade market that has several teams, maybe a dozen or more, who are looking for bats, looking for offense. That's a hard get. But I'm not saying they're not going to try and maybe not land somebody. But, man, the Pirates certainly are not the only team trying to acquire somebody.
Greg, the comment that Ben made on his show this weekend about how, hey, it's never been harder for a young hitter to succeed in big league baseball with the way pitching is and everything else, that you have to anticipate or think that struggles are likely. It's not linear. And we're a team that is dependent on a lot of young hitting. I said to Chris when he made those comments on Sunday, so then what were their internal projections for the Pirates this year? If they thought that it was going to be hard for a lot of their young hitters to produce, what did they think their record was going to be? 75 wins again? Because they were relying on young hitters. They didn't go, I mean, they brought some veterans in, but they're all one-year guys. They're not big. I mean, they're not guys you could count on or depend on to carry your offense this year. They were leaning on young guys.
Well, I mean, that's an excellent point. I don't know. You know, I don't. I guess
did they
be a
not
good
expect to have
him.
A good year? I mean, if you're, if,
I don't know the answer to that either. That's a good question.
I mean, they brought up the O'Neill Cruz thing too. Like, hey, you've got to be patient with him because the ankle. He's a year removed from having major surgery that no other baseball player had. I don't know, Greg. I mean, their pitching has obviously been much, much better, and that's what's got everybody excited because of what their starting pitching is. But now I'm hearing. I'm hearing Ben say things like, we didn't even really have that high of expectations for our own young guys to begin with this season.
Well, I mean, maybe that's the job of a, you know, I don't know this, but maybe that's the job of the general manager to bring down maybe expectations, you know, but that they worry so much about what the players hear and read that you know, he has to be so careful with his words. I know he's so focused on just trying to do two things. Number one, get the team better every single day. And he really does believe that. And he's so focused.
Well, how about Hayes, Greg? Should they just shut him down with the way he's playing and just rest his back? And...
Well, I mean, I don't know about that. I wouldn't. I mean, he's a cornerstone guy. I wouldn't give up on him just yet.
I don't think, I'm not implying giving up on him. I'm saying rest him because obviously what
Andrew, if his back is the or an issue, if he's struggling because of his back, then I think that they probably would shut him down.
If he's not struggling because of his back, I'm even more concerned.
Yeah, that's true too. Good point. Now, I will say that the last, I think, three games in Atlanta, well, maybe he played two of the three in Atlanta, he played one since, whatever it was, started to look like he's coming out of it. And maybe they see the same thing. But only they know, only he knows about the back issue. If that is the problem, I thought about maybe 3 weeks ago to a month ago, there was a game or maybe a couple that looked to me like there were some ground balls that he wasn't getting to that he normally does. And I thought the only explanation for me was had to be something to do with the back or some other issue that we weren't aware of. Now, he's been way better. His defense is back. So, you know, maybe it barks every once in a while, and it's just one of those things that they're going to have to kind of put up with and work through. But until, you know, he tells the Pirates that, or the Pirates tell us that, then we can only assume that he's just kind of going through some offensive struggles and trying to work through it, and he's healthy enough to go out there and play.
Greg, if the general manager has made it clear that the best chance they have for improvement or the biggest, you know, area where they could acquire players, so to speak, who would help their offense is internally, guys just improving, and those are acquisitions of a kind, guys just upticking. What evidence do we have to support the idea that Andy Haynes will be able to get that out of all of these players?
Well, I mean, I think there's evidence of guys improving, and not just this year, but you've seen in the past. You've seen some players that have, I mean, Sawinski comes to mind, you know, before this year. You certainly saw good stretches, and you look at his overall numbers, they're pretty solid for a first-year full-time player last season. If Andy Haynes is to be criticized, and I'm not saying he shouldn't be, but if he is to be criticized for players that aren't performing, then do we give him credit for players that are or when they do perform?
Who's performing on this team regularly enough for Andy Haynes to warrant credit?
Okay, well, Brian Reynolds obviously stands out. Andrew McCutchen, aside from a slow month of April, stands out. Connor Joe, for a good stretch, was playing good. Even Andrew's buddy, Edward Olivares, for a while, was playing pretty good. Through stretches now. Consistency is a key. You could argue that Brian Reynolds was not really good at all the first 6 weeks of the season. Now, you know, he might be flirting with an all-star game. So it's you know, for me, you guys talk about this stuff all the time with coaches, you know, Matt Canada, you know, with the Steelers and the offensive, you know, now they've changed personnel, the Steelers have. And now if the Steelers go out and play well offensively, is everybody going to credit a new offensive coordinator and not point to the new personnel? I wonder.
I guess the reason I asked the question is I know people listening to this interview right now and following the Pirates understand how good their starting pitching is at the top end of that rotation in particular and are looking for things to be optimistic about with their bats. And when the general manager says the greatest chance we have for that type of acquisition of a player is actually just guys on the roster improving, I don't see much reason for optimism because the majority of their everyday players are not good offensive players right now.
Well, right, and the key is right now. And I got frustrated by hearing that originally, you know, the best players, you know, you start to roll your eyes. The best way the Pirates can improve offensively is with the personnel. But if you listen to it closely and you break it down and you take emotion out of it as best as you can, it does make a lot of sense. He's not saying that the Pirates aren't going to continue to try and maybe get it done, acquire an offensive player or two, although and we just got done saying, my gosh, landing even one bat would be enormous in this environment. So it makes sense that the players on the roster, the 40-man roster, including some minor leaguers, if they make incremental progress, the 3, 4, 5 of them, that's going to have a bigger impact than just acquiring one bat. So, again, it's a matter, I guess, of mathematics in that respect. If 5 or 6 guys – oh, and by the way, should – going back to the players that have improved, I forgot to mention Nick Gonzalez, who, you know, aside from a 2-week stretch, has been as good a hitter on this team since his call up in mid-May as anybody, and he's back to stinging the ball again. You know, and if Tellez gets out of it, I'm sure Tellez will say that, and I know he talked about going to see some, or at least talk to a former coach or scout years ago that brought him into the big leagues, but they still work with these hitting coaches and Andy Haynes. The bottom line is that the Pirates' greatest chance of improving offensively are indeed currently on the major league and AAA rosters, and that does not mean that they are going to abandon the idea of going out to try and acquire a bat or two. That I think is the bottom line.
Last one, why Grandal over Bart? We need offense. We've seen Bart hit for power. We've seen him drive the ball. Why are they still treating Grandal like he's the starter and Bart is the backup?
So I don't know that yet. We don't know a pattern yet because Bart just returned the other day. I'm guessing, this is a total guess, I'm going to have to go back and look, it's a total guess that Mitch Keller might have not he's got a poor relationship with Bart, but Grandal has caught him a bunch, mm-hmm. and he probably feels comfortable with Grandal, I would think. And I would think the starting pitcher of Keller's stature now has a lot of say when it comes to who his catcher should be.
I don't disagree with that. That's why Davis never caught him since he stunk at the beginning of the year, to be honest with you.
Well, you might be right.
Greg, enjoy the ball games. These are big ones coming up tonight.
They are.
Tomorrow
and I guess we'll probably see you, Andrew, here at PNC Park for the four-game series coming up on Friday, the wraparound. You know who's coming to town?
Who's that?
The Mets.
Oh, yeah. I'll be there on Monday.
Oh, I figured.
But I won't be wearing Mets gear. I'll be rooting for the
good.
Pirates.
Nice.
Yep.
Good to have you back.
You bet, Craig. See ya.
I'll see you guys.
All right, that music means it's time for the Donnie Football Debrief, and it is brought to you by Saloni's Italian Bread. Take it away, Donnie.
The Debrief, July 2, 2024. Saw a story put out by our buddies at Pro Football Talk, so wanted to get into the MVP odds a little bit as we sit less than a month away from training camp. Patrick Mahomes, right now the consensus across the board, the best odds of anybody to win another MVP would be his third. DraftKings has him as low as plus 450. FanDuel, ESPN, a few others have him around 5-1. Josh Allen behind him around 8-1. Burrow 9-1 or 10-1, depending on where you look. CJ Stroud sneaks his way at number 4, around 10-1. You can get him as high as 12-1, it looks like. And then Jordan Love sneaking into the top 5, around 14-1 for him to win MVP. So the man who just won it this past season, Lamar Jackson, not in the top 5. He checks in at number 6.
Give me Jalen Hurts' odds if he's even there.
He's actually 7th. He's around 15-1.
I like that bet.
Where's Purdy?
Purdy is right behind Hurts.
Okay.
I think about 16-20-1.
I think Hurts is a very good bet for this reason. We saw his new offensive coordinator, Kellen Moore, when he was in Dallas. That was a team that put up a ton of yards, a ton of points. And I think the Eagles are too well run to have like the kind of decline they did at the end of last year where they went in just kind of like a bunch of bums. Mm-hmm. I don't think that happens 2 years in a row. I think he's going to have a big year.
If you had to bet on a Steeler to win an individual award this year, who would it be? All categories. MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, Rookie of the Year awards, Coach of the Year award.
I feel like you would have to just go with Watt by default. He feels like the only guy with a real chance to win Defensive Player of the Year.
You know what? If I had to make a bet, inherent in that sentence is I want to get some value. Peyton Wilson, Defensive Rookie of the Year.
That's my pick. I like that one.
We're actually on the same
page
here. Yes,
my issue with Watt is how do you do better than last year? And he lost.
Get more pressures.
They don't go by the stats anymore. He needs to get double team more, and then he needs to beat double teams, and even if beating the double team doesn't end up in a sack, that's still good enough with the people now that vote on Defensive Player of the Year.
What's his win rate?
That's what I mean. They've changed. It's like the only award in the NFL where it's not done by just the traditional numbers. They didn't go by PFF grade for the MVP. If they did, Josh Allen would have won the award over Lamar Jackson last year.
Correct.
But they decide that they want to apply that standard to Defensive Player of the Year, which is just weird to me.
Yeah, I'm just going Peyton Wilson.
I like that as a sleeper. That would be like in baseball if for the Cy Young they went by war, but for MVP they went by the guy with the most RBIs.
No, once they did the King Felix year where he had like the obviously the best numbers but bad win-loss, everything kind of fell in line behind that.
I understand that, but
no, I'm saying every other award fell in line that way. So it was consistent across the board.
But where's Russell Wilson to win MVP? Do they even list him?
150-1. He is in the same category as names like my boy Derek Carr, Bryce Young, Daniel Jones, Russell Wilson. They're all in that same group.
What's Anthony Richardson?
Got to scroll up here. They got him at, you can go 400, or you can go plus 4,000 on FanDuel.
40-1.
40-1. Right around the Kirk Cousins, Jared Goff range.
Oh,
Goff's 35-1.
Give me Goff at 35-1. Give me Goff. Goff and Hurts, those are my two bets. My reasonable favorite and my long shot.
I feel like that's actually pretty disrespectful to Russell Wilson.
You know, he's never gotten an MVP vote.
I know, but I mean, think of the names he's around.
You know Justin Fields has an MVP vote?
How?
Because they changed the criteria or the way they do the award now. It's not just you get one vote and you vote for the MVP.
It's like
you rank
choice.
Five guys.
Yeah.
And 2 years ago, when he had all those rushing yards and was on a horse crap team but was still making plays, somebody voted for him. So Justin Fields has more MVP votes in his career than Russell Wilson and Ben Roethlisberger.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices, anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.